Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 145 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show is writer, coach, endurance athlete, friend of the show, fellow Wide Angle Podium podcast co-host, former editor at Cyclocross Magazine, author of too many books to remember, but most importantly, the up-and-coming Shred Girls, it's Molly Herford. Known Molly forever. It was awesome to catch up with her, have a conversation about, gosh, everything she has going on, how she fits it all in, and then this amazing new book and book series she has coming out, Shred Girls, which I will be ordering a copy, not for my daughters, but for me. It looks great, and it's like legit publisher and everything. So cool. Really happy for Molly's success, and it was great to catch up. So we're going to get to that conversation in just 1 minute. But first, I want to talk to you about life insurance and Health IQ. I'm not going to go into the whole spiel. You know it. You listen to the show. You've heard me before. I am just telling you once more, I am cajoling. Yeah, that's the word. You to be an adult, take care of yourself and also your family and your loved ones. Go to healthiq.com/WAP. Go through the little tests that they have to see if you qualify and just get more information. You're going to get the best rates out there on life insurance. And that is going to be something that you want to investigate. And I think it's an investment that we all want to make. But I just need you to go in there and look at it further. And then you can check off the I adulted box for the week. So healthiq.com/WAP. You could do that while drinking coffee. That'll make it easier to do. If you have a nice cup of Joe while you're looking at the Health IQ stuff, that makes it go down. You have the coffee and also the Health IQ information that much easier. You can go to wideanglepodium.com, click on the Grimper Brothers coffee link, buy a bag of either the Full Schleck or the Hello Cyclocross Friends coffee, and then everybody wins. You get that further step to getting life insurance. You get a great cup of coffee and you help the podcast network, Wide Angle Podium. Not only a podcast network, a video network too. In fact, you should go and check out the latest MTB heat check I just put up from Whiskey. The off-roads epic rides race, killer event, really fun to see and to film. And I think I put together a nice little recap. You can check out the power rankings. They're up there from last week. We're going to get a new one of those up next week. Discover mountain biking. It's a fun sport. It's really close to cyclocross. And then we're going to take this whole heat check concept and port it over to the cyclocross world come fall. So you got to get in early now. So it just flows right from season to season. That's the goal anyway. If you need to get in touch with me, do it at feedback@cxhairs.com or just follow along on Twitter and Instagram @cxhairs. Go to youtube.com/cxhairs. Subscribe to that channel. You'll get a lot of cool stuff over there. Go to wideanglepodium.com. Become a member. Listen to Molly's show, Consummate Athlete. Listen to Let It Ride, the new show about roller derby, which you also should be signed up for. So many things. I have so many assignments for you all. Just click them all off while you're drinking your coffee and your day. You'll be able to, we talk about this in the podcast, but after that 5 minutes, you'll be able to say, I've done something today. The day has not been a waste. I've already accomplished these things. I bought coffee. I got life insurance. I signed up for this awesome video series. I gave money to my favorite podcast network. It's all good. Okay. Let's talk to Molly Herford. It's episode 145 of Cyclocross Radio, and let's do that right now. I just hit record. So now everything from this point on is in the record. So all that awesome stuff you were saying where you're so like, you know, just sort of loose and off the cuff, that goes
just
away
gone.
Now, right?
Gone, yeah.
Now we get
very stiff.
Professional Molly from here on out.
I don't think there is a professional Molly. Like, let's be real here.
All right, so we're gonna let's get into this though, because you got like really cool big news coming up, but which I want to get to and I want to talk to a lot. about a lot, but I also, you know, you sit there and have the consummate athlete and have been a journalist for years and have interviewed everyone out there. We need to get a little bit of Molly Herford background before we get going, because I feel like we've known each other a long time now.
Yeah, seriously. I think, well, you and I'm going to say, are sort of some of the first like full-time cyclocross journalists.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Before it was cool.
Because Cyclocross Magazine started, and then I started Crosshairs within a couple months of that. Mm-hmm. So it's right around the same time, and you were there. So when did the girl with the cowbell tattoo appear?
Oh my gosh.
And I know it seems like ancient times.
It really does. Very few people like remember that now. So I feel like the new generation has no idea about the cowbell tattoo, or that there's like six or seven Rutgers cyclists sporting the same matching tattoo out there.
Yeah. And so, yeah, even going back to that. So college and Rutgers, just to sort of start this thread. I mean, it didn't start with you in cyclocross. I mean, you were, what was your sort of entry point just into cycling?
Oh gosh. I'm afraid to even say it on your podcast, but
no, it's fine. No, it's okay. We're here goes. Safe place.
Yeah. Here goes. I was a triathlete.
You're putting me in a place that I don't belong. Cause I'm all for that. Gwen Jorgensen, one of my favorite athletes out there.
Okay.
She's a marathoner.
We're in the right
now.
Spot then.
Yeah.
Well, so honestly, like triathlon wasn't even a thing that I was super passionate about. It was genuinely, I was the least athletic kid on the planet. Like, pretend to pass out, pretend to throw up to avoid running the mile in gym class, kind of non-athletic. And in college, like my sophomore year, I started realizing, like, oh, I feel terrible all the time. I should probably start working out. And my dad had done triathlons in the 80s, like back when triathlon was hilarious. Yeah. You know, everyone had mustaches and wore sweatbands and raced in Speedos and, you know, had the down tube shifting on the bikes and just really funny stuff.
The glory days, I like
exactly.
to think of them.
Exactly. My dad did that like up until the year I was born. So I ruined his sporting career completely, but he kind of kicked off mine, I guess. it all came full circle. So I just started doing triathlon because that was legitimately just the sport that came to mind. So right. I started just swimming and biking and running, and it turned out I didn't totally suck at them. I was never amazing, but I was okay. And I joined Rutgers Cycling just to get better at the bike leg in the triathlon. And after I joined, they were like, well, the point system for the East Coast collegiate cycling stuff had just shifted, where women's points and men's points were equal for a weekend. So it didn't matter if you fielded 20 guys and one girl, the points would equal out, but you had to have a female in there.
Oh, so you were a valuable asset.
I was a really valuable asset. So they were like, hey, there's this thing called cyclocross. You're going to race it. And I was like, this sounds dumb. I prefer running without a bike. So I showed up to Grenogue Cyclocross.
Good place to just sort of jump in.
Yeah, one of the muddiest years ever. I think it was 11 years ago now. And I
was that like, yeah, so was that 2009 maybe?
I think that was 08
like
or 09.
Yeah, because one of those it was like, oh, well, if you didn't park in high ground, you needed a tow out of that parking lot. It was so muddy.
So that was that year, yeah. And I had the best time ever. Nice. It was so much fun. So I think that year the next year, I actually went from racing Ironman Louisville to the next week racing, like, cyclocross season started. So I was right off of triathlon into cyclocross. So I always had the fitness, but zero skill. It was great.
Yeah, but it's so here's my first kind of just thinking about this while you're talking, because I think it is a common theme out there that For cyclocross, we still, our PR work still isn't where it should be, because I know so many people, especially DC, since the, you know, you get these sort of type A personalities out there that don't do any sports, and then they decide the sport that they're going to do is triathlon. And again, nothing wrong with triathlon, but you're picking a multidiscipline sport, mm-hmm. which needs a ton of stuff and a ton of specific training. Where we have this silly little sport that you can just go ride anything and you're good. I just wonder, you know, what it just, I don't even wonder. It sort of fascinates me, that appeal that people are like, yep, I'm jumping in, never done any real sports, triathlon, that's where I'm going.
Triathlon must have amazing PR is sort of all I can think of, because I genuinely didn't know bike racing was a thing when I went into triathlon. Like, it took a couple of years before I joined the Rutgers team. And until then, I had no idea that people raced bikes. I legitimately thought that the Tour de France was like the only bike race in the world.
Yeah. Oh, I followed the Tour forever. And, you know, like late 90s, early 2000s, when I saw it's probably late 90s, cyclocross, like clips of it, you know, grainy pirated clips of it. I was like, what is this?
You know,
it was just
happening?
Insane. Yeah. It was, yeah. So it's kind of funny now. You know, maybe now that Jason Gay has put Matthew Vanderpool in the Wall Street Journal, that people will figure it out. Although I guess he put him in there now because he's a road racer, so who knows?
Yeah, we're getting there though.
Yeah,
I think people are kind of aware of it. But I actually realized as I was starting to kind of work on an outline for the third Shred Girls book.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm debating between cyclocross or bike packing as sort of the bike thing that they do, and I was like, I can't imagine girls reading this and understanding what cyclocross is, because it's so foreign from like anything that we normally would see in cycling. Like, we kind of know BMX, kind of know mountain bikes, but then you say cyclocross and people's eyes just kind of glaze over if they're not cyclists.
I think the bike packing would be cool.
Not
the play editor, but
I know.
Because it's and we'll get to this. I want to get into the whole into the Shred Girls, but it's like, it's a non-competitive.
Exactly.
Right? It's bikes, but it's not, you know, you've done two that are about sort of about competition at some aspect of it. So yeah, I think that'd be cool.
Yeah. That's where I'm leaning too. So we'll see. It means I have to start bike packing though. So I'm not unhappy about that.
No, I mean, I've been really, really sort of interested in going that direction as well. Everything just gets so crazy these days. I mean, I know you and I both are sort of on the same wavelength here too, that we have more balls in the air that we can juggle and just like, oh, we're gonna go and just disappear on our bikes and do something different.
Peter keeps being like, and which pannier are you gonna hold your laptop and your iPad and your microphones and your cameras? Right one. You'll carry the rest of our stuff, all right?
just wait until the day that you get to those little stocked outposts on trails and fire roads, you know, for hikers and stuff, and you're gonna go in there and there's gonna be like a little podcasting, you know, unit set up there for weary travelers to make sure that they can record.
That'll be the day I start doing more through hiking.
Another thing I want to bend your ear a little bit about, since it was a big part of your career in cycling, is the end of an era that you had a huge part in, which was, you know, starting, you know, managing Aspire, but also working with Jeremy for so many years. You know, what are your thoughts about the retirement?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was like a really emotional day for me, kind of reading his announcement about it, because I mean, Jeremy was, I think, probably the first professional racer that I interviewed, actually, I think at that Greno race race like right after. You know, he's been racing and winning for as long as I've been in the sport, pretty much. Or at least like podiuming. I think he kind of came way up in the first couple of years that I was racing. And, you know, I was covering him then. He was one of the people that I featured in my first book, Mud, Snow, and Cyclocross. Sure. I worked for him when I lived in East Hampton. I, you know, interviewed him probably 80 times, 90 times at this point for, you know, various magazines. And then, yeah, I traveled and worked with the Aspire team managing them for 3 seasons or 4 seasons. I've kind of lost track at this point. So Jeremy's been a huge part of my life. And we're actually thinking about it. The amount that he has done for the sport, even if you just think about the economy of U.S. cyclocross, there's no other racer that's been able to maintain a team like that for as long as he did, to maintain behind the barriers, to employ so many people. No other one cyclocrosser has been able to do that. So it's a huge testament to him. And yeah.
And even, you know, you talk about behind the barriers, and you know, I know you were like right in the thick of it when that was happening. And it was just to see the workload outside of actually trying to race your bike that went into that. And I just think about the stress that must have been involved in that aspect, and that I look at like what my budgets are to do things, and it's like, oh, it's a couple thousand dollars here, a couple thousand dollars there, where he's looking at like 6 figures to do live streams of all of the races out there. Plus he's, you know, at that point in his career, this invincible in North America racer. And I know very important to him, even though he wouldn't say it, to stay that way. Like he didn't want to get beat ever. He wasn't like going to take a week off. And that just seemed like such a crazy time. And you're right. You know, the amount of jobs that he supported, and just the profile of cyclocross. You know, we were talking about not doing a good job PR. Well, you know, maybe it's gone down a little bit since we lost that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Also, random funny tidbit, Sam Wiley Smith, the guy who, you know, helped start Behind the Barriers, actually went to the neighboring high school of me. And we had like a lot of the same, we knew a lot of the same people. We went to all these same places. We never met until we were both working for Jeremy in Massachusetts years later.
Oh, that's really funny.
So some weird thing about Hunterdon County, New Jersey, just breeds a devotion to cycling, I guess.
I didn't realize he was even. I mean, he just personifies like Pacific Northwest at this point.
Yeah,
you know, like I didn't realize he had those North
Jersey roots.
Yeah, roots. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. But, so, still. You know, you still, we're talking about the past and like the managing the team, but you're still right now, how many hats are we wearing? What are you doing? I mean, you got so much, I know, even to the point. Yeah, exactly. Like helping Ellen with the camp stuff. So still doing a little, unofficial rider management type things. And then also, I'm assuming still have some freelance work, and then also your own pursuits.
Yeah. Last time a radio show tried to list everything that I'd sent them in my bio, I had to cut them off after like 90 seconds because I was like, this is taking up way too much of the time and no one cares.
It's more a CV now than it is a bio.
Exactly. But I just won't give up any jobs. Bill Strickland, the editor of former editor of Bicycling Magazine, once gave me the greatest compliment I've ever received, which is that my capacity to work is just like unmatched. Because I will just keep taking on job after job after job because I love everything about riding and about like cycling and endurance sports so much that I won't give any of it up. So the short version is I would say I'm a writer at this point. I do a bunch of freelance for, you know, outside bicycling and a bunch of different other places. I have, you know, a few books out. I have the Shred Girls series coming out, and that's taken up a lot of my time. Obviously, I have the Consummate Athlete podcast, part of the Wide Angle Podium Network.
Preach.
And I finally am done coaching camps for the season. I somehow accidentally ended up coaching a bunch of junior camps, including Ellen's ENCX Quest in Tucson. So for 2.5 months, I was riding, you know, 4 to 7 hours a day, coaching the camps and then trying to do all of the other work on top of it, which was a lot. So now that I'm home, I'm like, oh, I have time again. This is weird. So I've taken up ultra running as a result.
Really?
Yeah, I have a 50K tomorrow. So this is actually kind of amazing timing because it's keeping me a little calmer talking to you than pacing around the house.
Wow. What's the training like been for that?
About like 50 miles of running a week-ish. Yeah. It's actually not too bad, but that's because I've had some knee stuff. So I'm kind of coming back from that and keeping the mileage fairly low. And honestly, the endurance cycling camps helped a ton because I'm now fit enough to ride for hours at a time, which kind of translates into running.
Yeah. So that's an interesting point too. Cause I've on a much different level, like I think I top out at 6 miles running and that's kind of done from there.
A great distance.
But if I get into that, you know, into that routine for a while, with a couple runs of that duration a week, like I get on the bike again and it's easier. And I just, what do you think? There's always been this myth about like, oh, you can't run. It's going to ruin your cycling.
Oh, that's crap. Like maybe at the absolute top level, like we tend to get in arguments over, should you run for cyclocross? How should you run for cyclocross? All that kind of stuff. And maybe when you're in that top 5% of people, you can maybe say running is bad for cycling. But if you're even at like a pretty high competitive level, it's not going to hurt you.
Yeah.
Fitness is fitness.
I mean, you talk to so many people around sport and I would think that even physiologically it's better because you're actually moving your legs in different ways than just up and down like on a bike, which.
Yeah. And even from like a bone density standpoint for older athletes that are starting to have to worry about that stuff, you know, cycling is really low impact, which makes it an amazing sport as you get older. But if you don't have some kind of that impact on your bones, you're going to run into some bone density issues. So running kind of takes care of that, and it doesn't take much to kind of pound on your joints a little bit.
So here's a sort of hacky interview question, but I am honestly curious, just knowing what goes on in my life from the time I wake up. What's your day look like?
Oh man, I pretty much like, this is my favorite question ever. I'm one of those weirdos that when I was a kid, I lived for women's magazines that would have like a celebrity telling what they did for the day. Also what was in their purse. So I'm always really happy to answer this question. I love this question.
Let's do both then.
Yeah. What's in my purse? What's in my gym bag?
I knew it wasn't going to be purse. What other bag? What are you?
I've tried so hard to pitch like what's in your saddle bag for years and no one ever lets me do it. Like what's in your jersey pockets, and no one ever approves that story idea. So it's very depressing. I don't know. My typical day, I get up, I roll out of bed, I do a ridiculous 15-minute core yoga routine that's like 5 minutes of planks and then like a 10-minute yoga flow. I've done that every morning for 4 years now, and it's ridiculous what 15 minutes, this is my like coaching platform here, I'm like 15 minutes of core and yoga a day is like 2 hours a week, which is like 100 hours a year. And you don't even really notice it because it's so short in the morning. So highly recommend everyone do that.
How do you convince yourself that that's something you can't skip?
Because it's one of those like cheesy habit forming things. But I honestly, every time I need to start a new habit, I pitch an article on it of like, what happens if I do XYZ for 30 days? And usually I can find someone who's willing to publish it. So I did that. I was like, I'm going to do yoga every morning for 30 days. So by the time I was done with writing the article, I was already in the habit of doing it. And it was pretty easy to keep it going. And I mean, you know, I'm getting a little older now. I notice when I don't, you know, if I like wait too late in the morning, I'm like, my knee is all twitchy and achy. And if I just stretched more, it would be fine. So anytime I try to kind of put it off and be like, well, I'll have my coffee first and then I'll get to it, I notice it.
Yeah, no, that's good. That needs something to be, you know, a couple years ago, I started the whole, you know, make your bed every day because then you've at least accomplished one thing before you start your day, that whole, which I'm all into, but that's pretty low stakes, compared to like working out first thing in the morning, even for 15 minutes, but I like that. Okay.
I've tried other workouts and stuff. I've tried running and that kind of thing, and I actually really hate those because you have to get changed. But yeah. doing some planks and some yoga, you can do that in your pajamas. It's fine.
Yeah, and it's once like I've made my coffee, I've been here in my basement sitting in front of my computer for like at least a couple hours before we started chatting. So once that happens, it seems like, oh, I just don't have that. Where could that time possibly come from? So
exactly. Yeah.
All right. You've convinced me.
Yeah. Yeah.
New
so,
habit.
Yes. So I do that. We have, you know, pretty relaxed breakfast and pretty much go right into work. It's, you know, that's the beauty of working at home. And the problem with working at home is you're always working. You're also never working. It's a very weird situation. Lately, I've been trying really hard to do all of my writing in the morning instead of diving right into emails, or at least when it's possible. Which, okay, let's be honest, is like half the time.
Yeah.
But I find if I wait to the afternoon to work on book stuff, it tends to be like, okay, it's been, you know, half an hour of writing this book. I'm good for the day. And I kind of miss out on the really good deep work of it. So now that I have some book edits for the second Shred Girls book due, I'm really trying hard to get focused on, okay, morning is writing time for articles and book stuff, and then the afternoon is sort of that reactive emails, try to book most of our interviews and stuff later in the afternoon, because frankly, by like 4, I'm pretty snoozy, so if I have to do an interview, I can't be snoozy. Like, find an excuse to not finish something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I train in the early afternoon and get my runs in, and luckily we have my long runs on the weekends, and I don't really do much more than 90 minutes a day running at the moment, so it's not too bad. It's a long lunch, but it works out. Yeah, I mean, basically I assume our days are probably pretty similar, like in front of the computer, do some kind of activity, back in front of the computer, keep going on that till the to-do list is checked off. Ellen will make fun of me for this, but I have the most obsessive to-do list on the entire planet.
Oh, like, yeah. Do you use an app?
I do. I use Todoist, which is like a little checkoff one. I love it. It's so good because it has dates and everything, but it also lets you check things off and set daily tasks. And it's the greatest thing in the world for me. So I have my morning yoga is on that as a daily thing. So every day I get to check that off. So I get one thing ticked off every morning.
Yeah. Yeah. I used a Due.
Mm-hmm.
Just same thing, except that it has like the little alarms that go off. Mm. And it's almost like PSTD at this point, where I'm like behind on stuff, and I'll keep like moving stuff up like an hour, and then it'll just be like bling, 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 like 8 in a row. Like, these are all the things you're not doing. These are all the things you're not doing. And I'm just like, oh God, stop.
Yep. Yep. The big thing I had to realize with mine was I needed to every night like reset it basically, or like shift things that didn't get done that day to appropriate days, whether it was the next day or like, okay, you know what? This isn't getting done till next week.
Yeah.
Because I was just getting it where it's like 800 tasks are overdue.
Right. Yeah. And then you just, yep.
It's just depressing.
So, let me ask, I promise we're going to get into the books, but this is stuff that just fascinates me.
No, though.
Another thing that I deal with constantly, and then I get really good at for about a week or so, and take Twitter off of my phone, and don't, you know, I'll look at it once a day, but only when I'm at my desk. And then that just, you know, it just sort of like seeps back in. It seems like you've done better at this, as far as, and I could be completely wrong, but kind of removing yourself from social media a little bit?
A little, yeah. So to be honest, I'm an obsessive mystery novel reader. And I realized a while ago that if I sat on Twitter and kept getting into conversations or scrolled Instagram, I had less time to read mystery novels.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So for me, that's my kind of like, okay, I have 5 minutes to sit. I'm actually just reading a fun book. I'm very rarely going to be scrolling social media because I really love reading.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of it. But I also, like a few years ago, took all of the notifications off of my phone. And I even on my email, I don't have the little number icon of how many emails you have unread. I took that off in December, so now I can't see my email number or Instagram or Twitter numbers, and it's so much nicer.
Yeah.
Because I have to open it to, you know, see if I have new emails or anything. I don't just see a number and panic.
No, that's smart.
That's a game changer.
Here, talking about like social media and like instant criticism and all that. Yeah, exactly. That you and I both have to deal with. But I think that especially early on for you, I mean, we all, you know, for better or for worse, Cyclocross Magazine is always kind of going to be a punching bag.
Oh, yeah.
I think they, you know, you did awesome work. I think Zach right now is doing amazing work over there as well. I you know, but it's, you know, it's the name Cyclocross on Twitter. So you're always going to get beat up a little by it. Did that years ago affect you? And did that help in just sort of, you know, getting in a mindset that, look, not really that big of a deal?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a really anxious person. I'm not going to lie. And stuff like that really will like stress me out and upset me for a long time. So I kind of realized back when I was working at Cyclocross Magazine, if I couldn't separate myself from, you know, the constant flow of criticism that comes from, you know, really working for any major media outlet.
Ooh,
or
you even get, I'm just remembering now, even like with the makeup stuff and bicycling, like that was a huge deal.
So the funny thing about that is I was actually almost completely uninvolved from that because there were so many amazing people that were just like fighting on my side of it.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. I've never had such a controversy around me.
Isn't that crazy?
So
that's
not
it?
About me.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, like this is it. An article that begins with the line, "No one is saying you have to or should wear makeup while working out."
Yeah.
Like, it literally had a disclaimer. And, like, there were so many amazing, badass women in cycling that are interviewed in it. And no one who, I think, honestly, I'd say 2% of the people who criticized it read the article.
For sure. Yeah.
The other 98% were angry about a headline. Actually, one of the other former editors of Cyclocross Magazine, I don't know if you caught this controversy, I guess, he posted about it with like a grumpy thing where he's like, my wife wouldn't wear makeup. And she roasted him for it.
I know exactly who you're talking about. And that doesn't, well, yeah. Okay. Anyway,
I got a public apology for that one. That was because then someone else is like, you know, Molly wrote that, right? And yeah. Then he went back and read it and was like, oh, I'm really sorry. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that one didn't even really faze me because it was
okay.
It was just like people are angry about a headline and making these assumptions without reading it. And how can I even fight that? You can't.
Yeah.
You can say read the article, but no one really wants to admit that they didn't. So you're just going to be in a Twitter battle for a day for no good reason.
Right. Right.
So I don't know. I guess my thing is I just kind of focus on like, okay, what's the next thing that I'm working on and like next piece of hopefully useful content that I can be putting out.
And that is a good segue into the next useful piece of content you're putting out. Even bigger than that, though, this is just let's get into the shred girls. You know, give me, I know this is book number two, but it seems like this one is different or publisher for this or...
Yeah, so this is what we'll call like book. It's technically it's book one, but like book 1.0. I don't know. I give it like a fancy new title. So this is like a very long-winded story. But a couple of years ago, I originally came out with Shred Girls Lindsay's Joyride as a self-published book. I thought it was a fun story. It was, you know, inspired by all these young girls that I'd been meeting and seeing and hearing about how they, you know, how they got into cycling, what kept them in cycling, and all of it kept coming back to friendship. And I kind of was thinking like, oh, I wish when I was a kid, because I was so impressionable as a kid, if you gave me a book, I would want to do it. You know, I read Harriet the Spy and started like keeping notes on my neighbors. I read The Babysitter's Club and started babysitting. So it's like, what if I'd read a book about bike racing when I was a kid or just biking? Would I have gotten into it? I'm like, I almost certainly would have.
Yeah.
Because I'm that impressionable. So I ended up, you know, kind of coming up with this idea and yeah, wrote the first book, had ideas for the second and third, came out with the first one. I had it out for a week, 2 years ago now, and Rodale Kids called me and said, hey, like if you pull this off the shelves, we'll give you a contract for it.
That's awesome.
And I was like, yes, that would be lovely. Thank you.
That is such, I'm like cheering for you from hearing this like 2 years later.
Well,
that is
it gets
such
even
a,
cooler though.
Such a great thing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So it gets cooler. Rodale ended up getting sold, packaged out to Hearst, and then Random House bought the books.
Yeah.
So suddenly my book goes from self-published to Rodale Kids, which is, you know, a really solid publishing company, to Penguin Random House. And that's
congratulations.
Yeah.
I saw the Random House there when I was looking at the site, but I didn't put it together. And that's just amazing. And it's one of these things that I can't go unpassed, as you know, people always talk about, oh, well, you just decided to do this and here it is. Like, you talked about your cyclocross book that you put out years ago that also, I mean, you know, you had a publisher, but it was self-edited. I mean, you were just sort of doing this on your own. So this is like a decade in the making. And I just love that. I sort of feel like we've been on a parallel journey and that kind of stuff with books and things that you found that success. I mean, congratulations. That's just amazing.
Well, we'll see how the sales go. Well,
getting your foot in the door is such a huge deal. Huge.
Yeah. And I mean, they're stuck with me for two more books after this.
Oh, that's
so
great.
That's really awesome. My fingers are crossed that it does well enough that the series can keep going and they can keep, you know, doing different types of biking. I called it Shred Girls with the thought of like, maybe eventually we get into some more extreme sports, because shredding is sort of this open-ended.
Amazing name. I got
Thank
it. You nailed it on the name. where did it come from?
Like, honestly, just a legal pad full of words and eventually deciding that that was the one that just kept coming back up for me.
It just works. It works so well. It's like, just think about the marketing, think about like all the shirts and everything else. You're like, oh, it's perfect.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm so excited about it. I mean, it's awesome because I know there are a lot of like cyclists out there that have gotten it for their kids. And there's a lot of like young female cyclists who've gotten it or are, you know, have pre-ordered it or have read the original version and all that stuff. But I'm the most excited about thinking about a little girl like I was, you know, super non-athletic, seeing it in a bookstore, which they'll be able to now because it's out with a bigger publisher that can actually be pushing it out to people who aren't into bikes. I just did an interview for, this is like the most embarrassing thing I'm ever going to say in my life, for yayomg.com.
Perfect.
A tween website. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't even believe that I'm getting to reach these girls that would have nothing to do with cycling. And, you know, they don't have parents that are in the cycling scene or anything. Yeah. They're just normal little girls that wouldn't have thought that bike riding was for them, because so girls drop out of cycling after the age of 8 at like a ridiculously rapid rate. And up until then, boys and girls are both riding bikes and, you know, pretty even numbers. And the drop off starts right in that like middle grade, you know, 4th through 7th grade, and just keeps getting worse and worse. So if we can keep them in that 4th to 7th grade and show them that girls ride bikes and that it's super fun and super cool and you can make friends and have these amazing adventures, like if we can keep more girls in it, imagine what could happen to the, you know, women's cycling scene.
For sure. Do you think that it's it becomes a stigma at that age, or it's just, you know, too much other things going on and not enough of support? I mean, what if just, you know,
it's a little bit of both. I mean, yeah, at that age, you're starting to, unfortunately, I'll argue against this till the day I die, early specialization in sport is becoming a huge thing for boys and girls.
For sure.
So, you know, you're so overscheduled now that, yeah, like time to just ride bikes and have fun is much lower when you start hitting that age. But studies have shown that girls will embrace those like kind of quote unquote boy activities if they're shown other girls doing them, or just not seeing that really. Like, I didn't know that there was cycling for girls in racing until I was in my 20s.
Right.
And there's, you know, there are stigmas, unfortunately, you know, there's all of these studies, like the Women in Sport Foundation, not that I have these statistics pulled up or anything, but girls in sports may experience bullying, social isolation, negative performance evaluations, or, you know, apparently the fear of being tagged as, like, quote unquote, gay is strong enough to keep a lot of girls out of traditionally male dominated sports.
Yeah, that's pretty awful.
And, you know, you show up for like a cycling. I was the only girl on the Rutgers cycling team for, you know, the first year I was on it. And then it was me and one other girl. And then it was me and two girls. You know, if you're used to being the only girl in a crowd, it's fine. But if you're used to playing on girls' teams, cycling can be really tough.
Yeah, absolutely. And just so this isn't a light book, as in physically. This is 256 pages.
Yeah, it's hefty.
So this isn't just like, oh, it's a little picture book, you know, which I think that when people hear you're writing either young adult or kids book, that they're going to sort of default to that. But, you know, how long does this take, you know, just to map out the story and concept? And then also, you know, just how did you get hooked up with the illustrations, and what was the process of working in illustrations and story together?
Well, I can say, thank God, I had the editors at Random House happened to, for the illustrations, hook me up with Violet LeMay. And
yeah,
I swear to God, she was in my brain. Like, for the illustrations of the girls, I had to provide really in-depth character illustrations, which I love doing because people will notice when they read the book that there are a few outfit descriptions in there. It's not a huge plot point, but I do love a good outfit description. You know what? Cycling is very fashion-oriented. So.
Oh, for sure.
The one guy at Canadian Cycling just did a review of the Shred Girls book, and he's like, you know, I would recommend this even for young boys. They might have to skip over some of the outfit descriptions, but to be honest, I narrate my outfits the same way when I'm getting ready to ride, so I understand where she's coming from. Like, yes,
look,
thank you.
The amount of time wasted on sock, bib, you know, everything,
exactly.
Color, length. Yeah, this is definitely not a girl versus boys issue in that regard.
Exactly. Anyway, so I had to write all these really in-depth character descriptions, but I swear she pulled these illustrations out of my brain. Like, when I first saw the picture that she did, the character sketch that was the three girls together, I actually just burst into tears because it was just so perfectly what I wanted them to be like. And they were just so fun and sassy and just cool. And I was like, I would pick this up and read it even if I didn't write it.
That's
just based
awesome.
On the
yeah.
illustrations.
Yeah.
The story itself, I'd say it was like probably 2 years in the making, because it took me a really long time to kind of come to the idea that I wanted to write the book. But conveniently, I'd had this story that I started when I was 25 about a young girl who thought she was a superhero and really wanted to develop superpowers, and no one believed her. And eventually the plot was going to be that she had superpowers. And I had that started. And that's kind of actually how the start of this book, Lindsay's Joyride, happens, is Lindsay really, really wants to have superpowers. And she's just like a bookworm and a comic nerd. And all she wants is, you know, to find some kind of like secret artifact that when she touches it, she suddenly gets this, you know, whatever superpower she gets, and she can help save the world. And she ends up realizing that, okay, superpowers don't exist, but, you know, on a bike, you can still feel like you're flying. You can still save the day. You can still, you know, be your own kind of hero. So I kind of had to shift around what I was doing with that first idea, but I kind of had the bare bones of the first, say, quarter of the book kind of already sitting on my laptop.
Yeah.
Yeah. From there, 6 months, 8 months of writing on every single plane ride over to Europe with Aspire, and writing at least something every day, whether it was a sentence or 1,000 words, until suddenly I looked at it and I was like, oh, this is actually a book now.
How was it working with an editor, working with somebody, you know, invested in what you were doing and sort of you know, what was the input and the give and take, just as far as story points and sort of making this, molding this into the finished product?
This one was kind of crazy because it got edited by an editor at Rodale Kids and then mm-hmm. by an editor at Random House. And then it got shifted to another editor at Whoa. Random House because the whole taking over Rodale Kids involved a lot of like staffing changes. So it's gone through three editing iterations, and it's kind of funny because there were a couple things where I had it one way, the first editor changed it. I was okay with that, but then the second editor wanted to like shift it back to where more like what it had been, and then the third editor wanted to shift it back to where the second editor had. You know, it made you dizzy.
Yeah, yeah.
The nice thing about that is you start realizing, because the first round of edits, when you have a book like this, and I've never published a fiction book before, I've had sure. a few nonfiction, but nonfiction, you can argue everything, right? You're like, no, like, I know this to be true. Fiction, you're like, oh, you think it should be done this way. Okay, well, you probably know better than I do. Sure. So having three different editors was kind of almost nice because you start realizing, like, oh, right, editors are also just people and also all have different ideas. So I don't need to take every single idea that they say and say like, oh, okay, I'll do this.
Yeah, that's pretty cool that you got to do that. Cause then, yeah, you're seeing that like this is just all subjective. And
exactly.
And absolutely. You're like, okay, well, this is my first time doing a fiction book. I'm going to trust the person whose job it is to look at these stories and make sure that they make sense. So that you, that's pretty neat that you were able to see different opinions on it and I'm sure be more confident in knowing the correct direction for the story.
Exactly. I got to like stand up for myself a little more on a couple of the changes that I like just wasn't into. And I think, yeah, having a couple of different passes through let me do that. So it was really good. It's also a lot more relaxing because when you self-publish, like I did with the first one, you're just like, oh boy, I'm putting this out in the world and really hoping that, you know, the couple people I had do a quick edit of it for me knew what they were doing. And yeah, that was scary. This is more terrifying, but it's always scary.
So important question here. Did Violet have any say in the color of the cover?
The like purple?
Yeah.
She did the whole, well, the lettering is done by a woman from New Orleans, but she
I'm just saying
did
Violet
the whole color.
And she went for the purple cover. Huh? I think she's taking, she's putting her stamp on this.
Wow. I hadn't thought of that, but that is a really good point. Huh? So I actually really loved it because I have her bike as green with purple accents, like Joker from Batman style. So
yeah, it looks good.
That also was the color of my cyclocross bike that NFG Cycles had made me. I wanted it to be like bright green with purple accents. So I kind of stole from my old bike for that.
Perfect. Perfect. That's awesome.
And Violet's been awesome. She rocks her Shred Girls t-shirt.
Oh, nice.
It's rad.
So the nitty gritty, when does it come out? What's the best way for people to get their hands on the book?
Yeah. So it comes out on Tuesday, May 7th.
Coming up.
So if anyone needs to see me, I will be cowering under my bed that day. I'm actually lying. I'll be at an elementary school talking to two library classes and then doing a NICA ride with some girls that night. So I'm pretty stoked. It's going to be a really good day. But people can get it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. However, also the Shred Girls website, so shred-girls.com, has links if you're looking for how to find it in the UK or Canada or the US. And the Shred Girls store is on there with some t-shirts and stuff. But the cooler part is I started the shredgirls.com website as kind of a compliment to the series because I realized, okay, little girl reads Shred Girls, is like stoked on riding bikes. This seems awesome. But she doesn't actually know anything about bikes or how to get a bike or how to ride a bike or how to do anything about it. So I really wanted to create a resource where girls could go and see real life girls doing bike stuff and sharing tips and, you know, having advice and stuff that's for girls, not for, you know, I mean, all of the stuff we do for adults is great. But if you're a 12-year-old girl, like the cover of Bicycling Magazine does not appeal to you. You Right. really don't understand it. And the advice isn't great, right? Like you can talk about the low carb or keto or intermittent fasting kind of diets and stuff like that. for adults, but for little girls, like sports nutrition advice is really hard to come by for the 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
Trying to create a resource that's designed with that age range in mind, as far as advice for nutrition and training and all of that, was super important to me, just to make the series actually like, okay, you can read the book and think biking's cool, but what's the next step? Okay, Sure. Here's the next step.
Yeah, and I see that you have that on this side, you know, the Shred Girl Super Simple Nutrition Guide. And then but just, I think this is a great place to start, or to continue building this community. Looks like a launch party. Got that going on?
Yeah. So if anyone's in Ontario near Toronto, we're having a launch party at this indoor bike park called Joyride 150. It's the coolest place on earth. I mean, obviously, if you read Lindsay's Joyride, you will see that the indoor bike park in that is sort of similar to most indoor BMX parks. Like, there's Rays, there's a bunch of other really cool ones in the, I guess, East Coast-y range. But Joyride 150 is my favorite, and they're helping host this big party, which is super exciting.
So this is a book heavily, you know, well, it's got your story, but also the illustrations on it. Any plans for an audiobook?
We're sort of talking about that. I would love to do it. So fingers crossed, because I think it'd be super, super fun. And I mean, let's be real, like, audiobooks are getting more and more popular, and even in the youth market, although mm-hmm. still not as, like, the youth market for audiobooks is still much lower than the adult market. But I would love that.
Yeah. I would tell people to go to shred.girls on Instagram. That seems like a good place to
get info, that's the other spot.
Yeah. Keep up to date on everything going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And cool. Anything else? Anything else we need to talk about the book, or anything else going on in the world of Molly Herford?
Oh gosh, everything's going on in the world of Molly Herford always. I'm trying really hard to keep my schedule as like clear as possible this summer, just in order to be able to do Shred Girls stuff. So
yeah.
We're actually, staying pretty close to home, or, you know, whatever home happens to be, New Jersey or Ontario for us, to try to make more stuff happen. But if anyone if anyone's listening and wants to do a Shred Girls event or ride or talk or whatever, you know, please get in touch. I'm hoping to kind of do a bit more book tour type things. So, yeah.
That's amazing. And maybe we should even try to figure out how to get some copies for some Wide Angle Podium giveaways at some point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'd love that.
Yeah, so awesome. Well, Molly, it was good catching up. We we see each other a couple times here and there, but it's the old cliche. Well, let's actually record our conversation, then we can talk for a while.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was super fun. And everyone should also head over to the Consummate Athlete podcast and listen to our episode with you from a few months ago.
Yeah, or some of the other episodes, since they to listen to me all the time. But no, that's and I will say that for people who subscribe to the Wide Angle Podium Network, I hope all of you do. If you do, awesome. Next step, you know, get your friends to do the same. It's what makes it possible for us to continue to have these conversations and to run this network. It's actually not free to do, but we want to give you the content for free, but also, you know, help out by becoming a member of our community. And we got the Slow Ride cycling related, we got, you know, Cyclocross Radio cycling related, CX a bike show, also mainly cycling related. you're the glue here. You're the ones bringing in a diverse group of guests to talk about a wide range of topics, and that's what I love, because it's always something different, and it's always just these cool nerdy topics, you know, from nutrition to physiology to bike packing to everything out there. So I love that y'all are keep on putting those out there and are part of the network.
Oh, thank you. We love yours too.
Fantastic. All right, cool. Well, I think that about does it. Thanks so much for chatting, Molly.
Thanks for having me.